The message of Easter, a four-part series here. One, birth of as a child. Two, playfulness as pets. Three, aware as silence. And four, ascension. Now we have three, aware as silence. All of us would love to be aware as silence. We have the vaguest idea what that means. But to be aware as silence means that when we go into meditation, and that's a strange thing to say, go into meditation, but when we meditate, we feel a sense of peace, a sense of stillness, a sense of balance and harmony, a sense of all is right with the world. All is right, and everything is beautiful. The sun is shining, the world is in harmony, everything is just absolutely glorious and beautiful. We feel good. That sense is the awareness as silence. Now, can you say you have ever experienced that? Now, you'd like to say yes, but you do it with trepidation. Why do you do it with trepidation? Why do you say with little doubt in your mind that you have had the experience of silence? Well, the reason you say it with doubt is because you're not sure how I'm going to define it. Now, you know for yourself that you have had awareness of silence. You have had feelings of stillness. Everything is just okay now. Everything is peace. And when some incident happened and it's all over, you know, that's finally done and over with. And in right order, peacefully, beautifully, it's done. Okay, now, those are sort of indications of the awareness as silence. But to truly be aware as silence, to truly be aware of silence, to truly be aware that the silence is there, you're not aware that it's there. And you say, well then, how could you be aware as silence? Well, when you are taking the trip, well, for instance, people come to campus here, and they drive on the campus grounds, our beautiful 104 acres here, and they look around and they say, high desert, you know. Manzanita trees and other trees, really quite lovely, old live oaks and brush and what have you. Doesn't look so neat, you know. There's no beautiful lawns here and lovely grand flower gardens here and all those things that you have planted yourself. That's true. And then you walk around, and you walk around alone is the best way. And as you walk around alone, you all of a sudden feel a rightness. You feel a goodness. You feel, hey, this is great. This is great. This is peace. This is a stillness here. And then you might hear a bird in the tree, and then it's gone. And then the stillness when it stops singing is so grand. And then you might hear a breeze. And the breeze, and you look around to see what the breeze is rippling through the branches of the bushes or whatever, and or you hear Rex breathing as he goes by you or something, and you're awakened out of the silence into alertness, and then when that's all gone, then you drop back into the silence. Now you see, but my mind. My mind is always going 100 miles an hour. My mind is always having so many thoughts about it. And I'm taken out of the silence by my mind. That's right. That's right. Have you ever taken a course in learning how to think nothing? No. Can you ever take a course in how to learn how to think nothing? No. Do people take courses learning how to think nothing? Yes. Do they accomplish what they wanted? No. And the reason they don't accomplish it, because you got to do it yourself. Now, when you think of a concept, you go into silence. When you think of a being, you go into noisiness. You think of your mother. You think of your family. You think of your friends. You think of the world. You think of the activity. You're noisy, noisy, noisy. But you think of a word like peace. Ah, peace. And you don't know what it means. But it has a spell that puts on. You say the word Om. And you think, that's a Hindu word. I mean, who wants to say a Hindu word? What is it? It has a certain meaning to it. It has a certain vibration to it. It's like saying God. God is okay, but you say Dio in Italian. And right away, the word God becomes magical, mystical. It becomes like a song, you know. Dio. You know, Io sono Dio. And the way it's been used in songs, too. But it becomes something sort of musical. It becomes something mystical. Something that takes you into another level of beingness. And pretty soon, you're thinking of nothing else. Now, you may ask, why we recommend you say, I am God, God I am, I am God, God I am, I am God, God I am. Why we have you say something like that all the time? Or why we have you say, peace, or I am peace, or peace? It is something that puts us in that frame of consciousness of peace and quietness and goodness. It takes us right out of the frame of busyness in the world. Because our busyness in the world is what keeps us from really entering into that silence. And we want to learn to enter into that silence. Because as we are aware as silence, pretty soon we're not aware. We're just not there. We're just in it. I can walk my path out here 3 miles around the campus property here, basically, and as I walk around this each morning and several times a day, in the beginning, I'm looking at my steps. And then pretty soon, I'm not looking at anything. I'm in myself. I'm in this inner peaceful attitude, this inner peaceful sense of stillness, of silence. And people may appear on the path, or may appear in the distance, or even Rex may be running around or something, and I don't even know he's there. And I don't really care. I have no interest where Rex is. I have no interest where anybody else is, anywhere around. I am just in, you might say, in that state of bliss. And when I'm in that state of awareness, see, aware as silence, in that state of bliss, I'm not aware of anything. And that's beautiful. Now, how often have you allowed yourself to get into that state? Well, every time I go to sleep. No. You have a very busy time when you go to sleep. But when you allow yourself to get into that state, what are you doing? What you're doing is you're being total peace. You're being total oneness. You're being total goodness. You're being exceptional in every possible way, and everything is revealing itself to you in its beautiful path. Now, I don't recommend that you walk down New York's street, New York City streets, and do things like that, because if you walk down New York streets and you're in meditation, what might happen is that you might walk into the traffic. Now, it wouldn't happen, really. It wouldn't happen, really. If you are meditating, and you are in introspection, and you are in bliss, and you are in silence, you are untouchable. You are unpossessed, you are non-judgmental, you are you are one-pointed. And you could not be touched by a car. You could walk along through a busy street, and you'd be untouched. And I say, I wouldn't like to try it. Of course you wouldn't like to try it, because you're aware. And the moment you're aware, then you're alert to the problem, and you create it happening to you. But when you are in bliss, you are untouchable. What do they say about sleepwalkers? Now, they have many things to say, but sleepwalkers usually can walk in the craziest places and never be touched. They walk on the edge of buildings, you know, and they do all sorts of amazing things because they're untouched. Because they don't realize they're in danger. They don't realize that they're in a difficult situation. But they are not necessarily aware as silence. But what they are doing is they are in that condition of silence. They're in that condition of another altered state of consciousness. And this is what really we are when we are aware as silence. We have entered into that altered state of consciousness. Now, to do that, it takes a little acting. To do that, it takes a little putting ourselves into the right frame of mind so that we can be aware of what we're doing. And when we're in that right state of mind, we know that we are training ourselves to be silent. We are training ourselves to be peace. Now, I give you the 3-hour meditation. And I recommend if you do it for 6 months, the way it's designed to be done, that you, at the end of that 6 months or before, will experience absolute bliss. Now, you could experience absolute bliss the first minute you enter into it, or it could be the entire length of it. But at least, now, what I suggest is the first hour, you just say, "I am God, God I am. I am God, God I am." And you can sing it and say it and just get that so into your consciousness that you're sick of saying it, but you're saying it. And then the second hour, then what do you do?
Why can I say
I'm God?
Oh, is that what you do? You ask yourself why you can say you're God?
Yeah.
Now, why can you say you're God? You ask yourself, why can I say I'm God? And what do you do? And you give yourself the reasons why you can say you're God. I can say that I'm God because that's all there is. Now, you say, well, Herb, go on, tell us more. I do, and I have. I have spoken for a full hour, many, many, many times in many seminars, giving the reasons why you can say you're God. And there are lots of them, and they're wonderful. But at this point, we are going into just a concept here. Now, I'm God, God I am. And then why I can say I'm God for 1 solid hour, you say that. Maybe you repeat the same thing because you don't think of too many things. But as you work on it over the period of time that you do it from 3 to 6 every morning, and as you work on it, then they come to you. You become so loquacious with all of these beautiful concepts of why I can say I'm God. It amazes you when you try to think of them later when you're not in the focus and they don't come to you. But you say why I can say I'm God. And then the third hour, and the third hour is the mystical hour, the enchanting hour, the hour when magic takes place, the hour when you do something that you have never done in your entire life. You have never done it in your entire life. Listen to the divine within. Really? Oh, I am. No. How often have you listened to God in you, talking to you as you? Really listens, without saying, ha, you know? How often have you really listened to the divine in you, talking to you as you, telling you all of the magic that's going on within you? You haven't. And the reason why I say you haven't is because whenever it comes through, it's good, it's wonderful to you. And you say, oh my God, that can't be true. That's too good to be true. An excellent speaker. Me, a great swimmer. Me, a wonderful speaker. Me, a dancer. Me, wow, no, I'm a goody, a goody, What makes one dancer a great dancer and another dancer an ordinary dancer? One dancer is the dance. The other dancer is dancing the dance. See, one dancer is the dance. The one dancer has learned how to talk and listen to the divine within. And the divine within is all. And so, the great dancer is not one who is very talented, capable, and learned in dancing. He is one who is the dance. And you, when you are one as is God in you, you are God. One, when you are that, and you listen to yourself talking to yourself, when you really listen, then you are God. Then everything is possible to you. Everything, not possible, but everything. You can do anything you want to do. Anything. Who do you think Michelangelo listened to when he was painting the Sistine Chapel? To the Pope? If he were painting the stuff the way the Pope wanted to paint, the whole Sistine Chapel would look quite different. Because the Pope envisioned those beings quite different. He had a different movie camera in his mind for reading the Bible than Michelangelo did. And that's true. That's true. That's true. Now, the medieval people, priests and so on, they put clothes on all of these statues because they didn't like them to be seen naked, because they were going through a period of that. And it's on and off and on and off, you know. And that's crazy. It's crazy. These are the things that make the changes in the world, how everybody looks at their divinity. Now, the medieval people, if they had looked beyond themselves, the outer clothing and all, they would have seen the divine that Michelangelo painted. But to see the divine, they have to get past the limitations of all of their thoughts about themselves. As actors, they were acting in the role of medieval people. They were acting in the role of the type of clothing that they wore in those days. Now, what if the medieval people were the people today? They would be thinking of Jesus dressed as we are dressed today, you know? They'd be clothing all of the biblical figures like ourselves, you know? And why is it that they had dresses on all of the biblical characters, you know? Why did they have robes on all those characters? Well, they hadn't got their sewing machine busy and making pants and other things, you know. And this is what they all wore, you know. And a little later they became more civilized. But symbolized, not civilized. And but each generation, with their acuteness in sewing and artistry, you know, it's amazing, you know, really amazing. So, when we are aware as silence, we go beyond, we go back to our original purity and integrity, we go back to our unconditional love. Now, when you are unconditionally loving, you are in a state of bliss. You are in a state of silence. This is a state of silence, aware as silence. But are you aware that you're unconditionally loving?
No.
Never, 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 never. You are unconditionally loving because it's your nature. It's your essence. It's your beingness. And no one can compare it. No one can say, oh, Herb, you're so unconditionally loving. Oh, really? Takes one to know one. Okay, but what do you mean I'm unconditionally loving? What have I done that's unconditionally loving? Well, you didn't judge. And you didn't get angry at people, and you didn't do this, you didn't do that. Well, is that unconditionally loving?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it is. You know, how else would we define unconditional loving? You know, untouched, one-pointed, unpossessed, non-judgmental, unconditional love. Well, that's what we said, didn't we? Self-determination, self-dedication, self-diligence, self-discipline. My goodness, those are old hats that we've worn for a long time. Now, why don't we start parading them around a little bit? Mm-hmm. Can you be unconditionally loving? Oh, you're so unconditionally loving, you don't even realize what they're doing, that the bad stuff they're doing. You don't realize how terrible they are. You don't realize what they shouldn't be doing. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even realize what you're talking about because I don't live in that consciousness. If I were to live in that consciousness, then I would not be unconditional love, would I? I would be conditional love. I would be loving you. Now, if you behave, I'll love you, you know. And why can't you love me more? Why can't you show me your love? Well, do you show me your love? You don't say that. But do you show me your love? No. If you are a little kitty cat and you're snuggling around somebody's leg, just like, do you concern yourself with that person, whether they're loving or not, whether they're angry or not? Do their vibrations disturb you? And you say sometimes yes, no. Their vibrations don't. If you come into the room with a scowl on your face, and the kitty is laying there playing, and looks up at you and sees a scowl on your face, he says, and he goes back to playing. He says, I will not accept a scowl on my face in this room, you know, no way. And so then after a while, you realize your scowl isn't going to get any place because the cat's not going to pay any attention to you. So then you smile at it. You cute little thing, you know. And that's exactly what the cat had in mind. You know, exactly what unconditional love has in mind. There's no place for a scowl. There's no place for a frown. There's no place for anger. There's only a place for being who you are. And if who you is, who you are, who you is, if being what you are and who you is, who you are, is being unconditionally loving, then that's all that matters. That's the truth about ourselves, and that's the reality about ourselves. Now, are you ready for that reality? Are you ready to enter into that state? Are you ready, really, as the actor we've been talking about, as the playful pet that we're talking about, can you really be this unconditionally loving person, you know? Because to be this unconditionally loving person is a person who lives the ideal life. Who lives the ideal life here and now on planet Earth. We are relative beings. We are absolute, but we're relative beings. We have chosen to come here and be a puppet on Earth. We're the puppeteer. We're the puppet and the puppeteer. You know what that means, don't you? That means you're the little clone and you are the person who operates that clone. Okay, now, so you're the puppeteer and you're telling yourself as the puppet what you want it to do. Now, what do you want it to do? Now, what you want it to do is you want it to be free of you. Now, this is another thought. You want the puppet to be free of the puppeteer. You want the puppet to be absolutely itself. And for the puppet to be absolutely itself, it must be its own master. And for it to be its own master, it has to go and mine for gold. It has to go and drill for oil. It has to get that inner reservoir of fuel, of beingness that it is, and bring it forth. Okay, now, the silence separates you from all outer experiences, from all outer gods, from all outer attitudes, from all outer causes that might make you act in certain ways, and you're untouched. You're totally untouched by anything. And as you're untouched, then you really are in a state of bliss, because the bliss leaves everything behind. The bliss leaves any otherness behind. It leaves anything that is not what? Allness. You see, in the bliss, you're the allness. You're the isness. In the bliss, you are that divine, magnificent expression of everything that is utterly fantastic. So, now, aware as silence, we are aware as silence leading into the silence. Once we enter into the silence, then there is nothing more. Then we experience the ascension. But now, we are still working on getting into the silence with our awareness. We get into the silence with our awareness, like our 3-hour meditation. with the third hour being the hour of bliss, the hour of ascension, the hour of oneness of us and the universal consciousness. And we are totally unaware of anything. After a short time of working on this, we should be totally out of it. We should be totally out of awareness of anything in the physical, awareness of anything in the mental or spiritual or any aspect. We are just out of it. We are the all. If you had the ocean here, and I said, whoops, I'm a drop and I forgot to get in the ocean. And you say, well, come on, jump in. So you jump in the ocean, you one drop. And then, hey, where'd you go? Where'd you go? And the drop is with the allness. The drop is indefinable, indescribable, unseparable, inseparable. It is totally gone, and yet it's there, you know? It's in that allness, it's in that magnificence that is so utterly amazing. And to conceive it, to think it as a concept, to take it as a possibility, it makes you think, my goodness, isn't that amazing? Isn't that just amazing that we can even get that close to being aware of silence? Aware of sound, to get that close to being aware of sound, that there is a concept of allness, and that concept of allness is very exciting, very revealing, very rewarding. Now, as I say, if you're willing to do that through our meditation, it will move you into it. But let's just be honest with ourselves and say that the majority of people never know about three-hour meditation because the majority of people do not have access to our program and our projects and so forth. But what do the majority of the people have access to? The majority of the people have access to themselves. They have access to the ability of saying, what does a racer do? A racer. What is a racer? A person who's racing the race, a runner, do when he comes to the end of his race? Takes a deep breath and lets it all out, sort of cleansing out all that worked up area and all that worked up atoms and stuff that have been, you know, really giving him all that power and energy. Like hyperventilation type of thing. And then after a while, you breathe normally and you don't know you're breathing. And when you don't know you're breathing, you sort of drift into a state of somnolence, a state of almost sleep. And you're unaware. And you're unaware. And you're not somewhere else. You are in yourself. But you're not somewhere outside of yourself. But you're just not aware of anything around yourself for a moment. Now, you could be in that silence at that moment and stay there. Except that your body, mind, and spirit say, come on, they want to congratulate you for winning the race, or you got to get off the track, or you got to do this or do that, you know. And so we're called back. Mm-hmm. Our body, our world calls us back. We have gotten so close, not only then, but in many other experiences of such a nature. We've gotten so close. And that's why racers race. They really want to get to that point. They don't know that. They don't know that their goal in the race is bliss. Swimmers, runners, divers, you know, paratroopers. Why do people jump out of airplanes in parachutes? Why do people go on a bungee cord out of an airplane? They want that thrill. What is the thrill? The thrill is that, it's a bliss. It's a bliss. But the thing is, they know that it's not going to be eternal. Otherwise, he wouldn't take the bungee cord. He'd just jump and splatter himself all over the pavement. But the thing is, you see, they want that feeling. Everyone basically is after this feeling of bliss. It's after this feeling of aware as silence. And you never will have it. Because the moment you're at its threshold, the moment you step across the threshold into that silence, you're unaware. You're unaware of anything. You don't have a body. You don't have anything. You don't have a family. You don't have a world. You don't have anything. And you could stay. People in their out-of-body journeys have the opportunity to do that. And that's why people want to take out-of-body journeys. They want that state of bliss that could come. But how do we get back? How do we get back? Well, you see, you blew it. Mm. Oh, that bungee cord. I don't want to spider myself over the pavement. You see, we're going to come back. Now, Ellen, what does it mean, and don't answer me, what does it mean when I say light at the end of the tunnel? It means a way back. It means you want to come back. If you see the light and no tunnel, then you are there in that bliss. But people want to come back. They want that golden cord from their solar plexus that leads them back into their physical body. They don't say that golden cord is my connection to my divinity. They say it's my connection to my humanity. You know? Yeah, talk to anybody. That's what they'll tell you. Where is the other end of your golden cord, huh? Where is the other end of your golden cord? That's my body. Well, the other end. Where's it go? Where's it go? You see? And this is the fun thing. The fun thing is, when you know these things, and you can let them go, and be aware as silence, then you have made the ascension. Mm-hmm.